This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Good afternoon, folks, or good evening, or good morning, wherever you might be. You are listening to episode 37, yes, 37 of the Dreamcast Junkyard DreamPod. My name is Tom, and I'm joined by Rob. Hello, Rob.
Hello.
How's it going, all right?
Yeah, it's all good, my friend, all good.
Fantastic. We're also joined by Mike Phelan. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Tom.
How's it going?
Not bad at all.
There's a theme developing here. Everyone's fine. We've got a special guest host occupying the ever-evolving chair. We have, on his second appearance, actually, on the DreamPod, Mr. Stephen Robinson from Dreamcast Hub. Stephen.
Hello again. It's all going well.
Excellent, so excellent. Yeah, for those people who don't know, Stephen is the proprietor of the Dreamcast Hub. You can find him on Facebook and on the internet at large just by typing Dreamcast Hub, basically. Oh, on Twitter as well. And you made your first appearance on the DreamPod. Was it the fighting game special? Oh, it was a shmup. The shmup pod.
Yeah, it was a shmup. That's my thing.
Yeah, that's your thang. Yeah. How's everything going at your end, Stephen? Okay?
Oh, yeah, man. Really good.
Excellent. Okay, well, we'll begin as we always do, and we'll talk about what we've been playing and things we've picked up. I will come to Mike first. Mike, what have you been playing on the Dreamcast or otherwise?
So I've been getting in the Olympic mode this week. Obviously, the Olympics have started yesterday.
What you mean you've booked yourself into a really crappy hotel and all the wallpaper's falling off the walls? And
yeah, taking loads of drugs. done the whole thing. I've been playing lots of Olympic games. I'm a massive Olympic game fan. I'm a massive Olympic fan, mainly because I like lots of lists, as people might know.
Yeah,
but I've been playing the three Olympic games on the Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. And Sports Jam, because it sort of fits into it.
Yeah,
and it's been very, very enjoyable. Not quite as enjoyable as watching the Olympics on TV, but nearly.
Did you watch the opening ceremony? I've actually seen nothing of the Olympics so far. But was it as good? Was it as good as the one in 2012? Because that was awesome. The one in London.
It wasn't as good as Danny Boyle's spectacular. No, it was. It wasn't quite as good. There wasn't any NHS doctors and patients in beds coming out.
They're all on strike. That's why.
That's true. Yeah. But no, it was. It's good. I think the highlight so far has been rugby sevens.
Okay.
Massive rugby fan anyway, and to see rugby in the Olympics is awesome.
Interesting stuff. Have you played anything on the current gen systems or picked anything up?
I've picked up three games today because they're all used. I've picked up Dark Souls 2, Dragon Age Inquisition, and Terraria. Is that how you say it?
Terraria.
Is that how you say it? That's what, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm
yeah.
sure there's more R's than that, but yeah, so I'm actually waiting for two of those to come tonight, but I've got those to play through. I've fitted a new hard drive to my Xbox One. So I have lots more games I can fit onto the console to attempt to play through. But I haven't actually played much, do you want to see?
No? Okay. No. Cool. Well, we'll move on to you, Rob. What have you been doing? Rob, you've not been on the podcast for a couple of weeks. And also, you've been to Japan, I believe.
I have.
Yeah, was that with work, was it?
Yeah, it was with work, with T3. Nissan were unveiling some new autonomous drive technology, and flew a few journalists out from the UK as well as various other countries to Tokyo to see while it was unveiled, essentially. So yeah, I was in Japan for 3 days, so it was a 5-day trip, 1 day lost going over there and 1 day lost coming back. But yeah,
awesome.
It was awesome. Like, in terms of gaming, unfortunately I didn't get a chance to go to Akihabara, but I did manage to go to, I think it was called the 8-bit game bar in the Ginza district. So I'm sure Ross and other people who know more about the different regions and where sort of like hot gaming you know, is takes place will know more about that than I did. But it was an amazing little bar. I don't know how to describe it. Like, you're just walking down the street, and then there's like a sort of nondescript stairway sort of leading upwards. And by the side of it, a bit like apartment buildings, you had like different numbers with different names, and one of them was this bar, and you go up a couple of flights of stairs, and then basically someone's turned like their apartment or an apartment into a bar.
Wow,
it was, you've just got like an American style strip bar with obviously with loads of booze and stuff on it, and then the rest of the place is just filled with like classic retro gaming consoles, arcade machines, those bar top arcade things where you can put your drinks on them as the screen on the table, and loads of like paraphernalia and gaming related goodies. So that was real fun. Yeah,
it sounds awesome.
Sorry, yeah, that's what I've been doing. Yeah.
I saw your like posts on like Twitter and Facebook, and I was just like, I'm not jealous at all. No, nope, not jealous.
I gotta say, it was really, really special. I mean, like, there's better places. I'm sure there's better places. I'm sure there's people who are going to come on and say, oh, you shouldn't have gone to that bar. You should have gone to this bar. But I thought it was really quaint. And yeah, for retro gaming love, it was really good. So we did that. Also got a bit of karaoke in.
Oh, you got it. You got it.
Yeah, went to the karaoke bar that's in Lost in Translation.
Okay.
Yeah, spent like from like, I think it was about 1:30 a.m. till about 5 a.m. in the morning. Just... Ooh. Performing definitive renditions.
Definitive, I'm sure.
Definitive renditions, yeah. But anyway, back to gaming. In terms of gaming, nothing on Dreamcast, I'm afraid.
Okay.
I've been playing on, unsurprisingly for me, I've been playing on the Xbox One S, which I got to review for T3.com. So I've got that new system in, and I've never had an Xbox since the original Xbox. I sort of completely passed over the whole 360 thing. So, yeah, this is the first Xbox in my house since the original. And, yeah, I've been playing on that. So I've been playing a bit of Halo. I know it's old hat now, Halo 5, and Rise of the Tomb Raider on the Xbox. I've also been playing on Vita, which yeah. I know you love, Tom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've decided to restart Hotline Miami because I was doing all this traveling, you see. Yeah. And I was like, I need something to play. And I got Hotline Miami, and I thought, I'll reinstall that. And that, I mean, I don't want to talk too much about it, because I know it's an old game, and there's even been a sequel. But man, that is like a rush. You know what I mean? The soundtrack in that game is intense. And just the brutality of the violence, and the speed, and the risk-reward mechanics, where it's like you can't play safe if you want to beat that game and beat it well. It's not about just getting through the levels in Hotline Miami. The beauty with that game is that if you want to S rank, you need to do it in style. And that means like horribly killing a lot of people.
It's funny you say that actually about the soundtrack, because that's one of the overriding memories I have of the game. With a pair of decent cans on plugged into the Vita. It sounds incredible.
It gets in your skull, and then you're like, do you know, like when you listen to something so long that like the background, like the bass line and stuff, remains in your head like hours and hours and hours afterwards. And then like so certain times I've been waking up the next morning and I've got like etc. going on in my skull. I'm like, I'm half expecting some guy in like some horse mask to come bursting through the door wielding a machete and brutalize me.
That can be arranged, Rob, if you like.
Oh, God.
Cool.
But, okay, that's me. I'm done.
All right, let's go on to Stephen. What have you been doing? I know you've been playing on the Dreamcast a lot, because obviously I follow you on Twitter, but for the people listening who don't, then enlighten us what you've been doing on the Dreamcast or otherwise.
Well, so for the few games I've been playing lately, main one, obviously, is going to be Egg. I've been working on a review for that. And now it's not even about the review. I just want to finish it. The game's amazing.
That's Elemental Gimmick Gear.
Yeah, EGG. Yeah. But yeah, I don't want to say too much right now, but it's just got this phenomenal atmosphere, and the sprite work in it is just amazing. For me, it's like the best version of any top-down like sprite work game that's out there, but just because of the richness of it. Like, as far as I understand, it was supposed to come out on Saturn.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what the public consensus seems to be. And then they figure that they added on the 3D battles for just like the Dreamcast release. because it just didn't make it on Saturn.
I have to admit, I've never played Egg because it's one of those games that didn't get a UK release or a PAL release. So it's one of those games that I've kind of looked at with envy because the Japanese version comes up on eBay all the time and it's, you know, super cheap, but the US version hardly ever does. So yeah, I'm quite envious that you've got that. And I'm looking forward to your review, actually, just because I want to get more information about how it plays and that kind of thing. Well, so
it's actually funny. I actually just bought the Japanese version off of eBay just for the manual so that I could swap out the bot with the case art that's in there.
Oh, because the Japanese and the US boxes, the manual makes up the front cover, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So it's just so much better, the Japanese one. So I feel like that's the way it should have looked. But yeah, that and Resident Evil Code Veronica is the other one I started playing through again recently.
Okay, is this like the first time you've played it, or have you played it previously as well? Or
I played it before, but I always got stuck on the same spot. So I have this habit with games, if I keep getting stuck in a spot, to just redo the whole thing. Just being
out
like,
of interest, what's the spot you got stuck at? Because I did the same, actually.
It was the part right after you have to print out that, you have to like print out a badge. Like with the world's first 3D printer.
Oh, that's quite early on in the game, though.
I know. It's
shame on you.
I know. It's either time or just not being able to figure it out in enough time to where like I don't have like a couple hours to spend going, I really need to figure this out. So yeah, and then I'll go play something else or some new game will come in the mail and I'll be like, hey, there's something I can get pretty far in.
It's like when you start reading a book and you get to a certain point and you put it down and you never go back to it.
Yeah, basically. Like Time Stalkers is one that I did that with.
I mean, the place that I got to in Code Veronica where I've constantly been stumped is right at the end of the first disc where you're in that plane and you have to fight against that like monster in the back of the plane and you have to like jettison it out of the cargo hold. And I've never got enough ammo or bombs or anything to like kind of stun it. So I'm constantly getting hit, and oh, it does my head in. I've got to that point twice now, playing through the first disc, and I've never got to the second disc, and it's just like,
I definitely have to get there for sure. And the only other one I've been playing is Stupid Invaders, because that game is phenomenal.
It's great, isn't it? It's such a good, it's so fun.
Yeah, my copy, unfortunately, the manual was folded into a paper airplane before I got it. but I'm okay with that. It's complete, at least, and complete trash looking, but still it's fun. Yeah, it's actually weird. It's pretty, I feel like they got away with a lot for the rating that they used for it.
Yeah.
Like there's a part in it where you melt Santa Claus like to death.
isn't the main baddie called Bollock as well?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So yeah, it's very tongue-in-cheek, very very French as well. It was based on a French cartoon, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. The other cool part is that you can use mouse with it, which I love, because then it's literally a point and click.
Yeah, and it's actually the only officially released point and click game on the Dreamcast, I believe.
Really?
So
there should have been more with that mouse support.
Oh yeah,
but that's it. That's all I've been playing recently. Not really anything interesting or new, sorry.
No, that's cool. You know, I mean, Stupid Invaders is one of those games that kind of gets overlooked, really, when you look at the Dreamcast. So
I have such a love for the obscure, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, you and me both. You and me both. Okay, I'll just briefly tell you what I've been playing. On the Dreamcast, I've been playing, as I've been putting on social media, Wind and Water Puzzle Battles, because I've never played it before, and I got the reprint that came out recently. Amazing game. Also, Rush Rush Rally Racing, which I picked up at a recent event that I was at, which was a Revival Solstice in the UK. And I'll talk a little bit about that after this section. Other systems I've picked up games for have been the Game Boy Advance. I got Rayman 3, Broken Sword, and a game called Star X, which is basically like Star Wing or Star Fox, but on the Game Boy Advance. Really technically impressive.
Can I talk to you? Sorry, just to interrupt you there. I saw your very brief post on Broken Sword. How's that play? Because I'm a huge like fan of the Broken Sword series, but I've only ever played those games on PC. So how does that work? How does the interface work? And
I mean, I've only ever played Broken Sword, the original, on the PlayStation 1.
Okay.
It's very kind of FMV based. So imagine Broken Sword on the PlayStation 1 or the original game on the PC, but with all the FMV removed, so it's static backgrounds, and then you just kind of move from one place to the next, like going off the screen, and then it changes to the next like background, pre-rendered background.
Right.
And you move a little cursor around on the screen, and things that you can interact with, the cursor will change depending on whether you can like interact with it. So if there's something on a desk, you can you know, pick it up and the cursor will kind of like turn into a hand pointing to it.
Do you have all the original dialogue though?
There's dialogue, but it's all written. It's not spoken. So there's no kind of like audio, like recorded audio. So it's just background music and that kind of thing. But
last thing, you don't find like the scaled down version of the art and specifically sort of like cheapens it, because for me, half the beauty with the broken sword is that, you know, are the beautiful backgrounds and the animated characters and even the voice acting, which even in the first game was pretty damn good considering when it was released.
Yeah, I mean, it does, obviously having played the original, I kind of knew what to expect, so I know how the first part of the game plays because I've played it, and I remember the really cool like animated like cartoon sections and stuff, and in my mind I can kind of still see them when I'm playing it. But for somebody who's never played the originals and then goes to play this first, you might be a little bit underwhelmed because it is obviously on the Game Boy Advance. But as far as like, you know, little point and click adventures go, it's really, really quite cool, to be honest. So I didn't actually know it was on the Game Boy Advance until I saw it. I think it was like £2, so I thought I'll get that just out of curiosity.
You gotta love George and Nico, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Nico especially, I mean, like, wow.
Apart from those on the Game Boy Advance, I've been playing on the Vita. I've been playing Ultratron, which is the new PS Plus twin stick shooter, which is awesome. It's just like an upgraded version of Robotron. Fantastic game. Rayman Origins, which I picked up at a car boot sale about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Plays fabulously, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a brilliant game. £5 it cost me, the cartridge version on the Vita. And on the PS4, I've been absolutely embroiled, sucked into Metro Last Light Redux because it's unbelievably good.
I love it. Such a good game.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Anyone play the original Stalker?
Yes.
On the PC?
Yeah. Yeah. How does Metro... Those guys, sorry, I didn't see who said yes, but how's Metro compared to Stalker?
Steven, over to you.
I would say it's weird to explain. It's more open and more linear at the same time.
Okay.
It's really mostly graphics and the kind of... the kind of little details that they added to it, like the lighting, the flashlights, everything beyond. Like, it's story-wise, it's very close.
Uh-huh.
I'm so sucked into that universe. It's made me want to get the books now, so I want to read the books and read more about the expanded universe of the history of the characters and the world it's set in.
I think you know you've done something well, because I guess it seems post-apocalyptic, right?
Yeah.
I think if you do... You know, there's so much post-apocalyptic fiction in every medium that if something stands out like Metro does, then you know they must be doing something right.
Yeah, I mean, it's so original. I mean, I don't want to dwell on this too long, but the whole, it's set in the it's called Metro because you're actually in the Moscow Metro, like, underground system. So, yeah, it's really cool. The last thing I got, it's very kind of loosely related to the Dreamcast, but I wanted to mention it anyway. At the same car boot sale that I picked up Rayman Origins from, I randomly discovered Tivola, the company that actually gave Sega a lot of grief for using the Orange Dreamcast swirl in Europe. Mm-hmm. Two CD-ROMs that were made by them, and I picked them up because they were like 50p each, so I just thought I'll get them just because they're part of like Dreamcast lore and history. And I mean, if you put them next to official Japanese Dreamcast games with the little swirling things on the spine, they do look quite similar. So I can see kind of where they were coming from with, wait a minute, you've got an orange swirl, we've got an orange swirl, you can't use that. So yeah, even like the discs themselves, the CD-ROMs themselves, when you open it up, you've got like a big swirl on them. And it's just like, you can kind of see where they were coming from.
It sounds like they're antagonizing them at that point.
Yeah.
Like, you thought the one on the case was bad. What do you open it up?
Yeah. But it's just, I've never seen them before. In reality, I've obviously seen stories about why the Dreamcast swirl in Europe is blue, but I'd never actually seen firsthand how similar the Tivola cases actually looked to Japanese Dreamcast game cases firsthand. So crazy. Now I've got them in the collection. I thought I need to have those anyway. I'll just move on to the next section. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to talk very briefly about the event that I was at last weekend, which was Revival Solstice in the Midlands in the UK. And this is it's actually the largest retro gaming centred event in the UK. And it was just fantastic. It was a 2-day event held at the Banksy Stadium in Walsall. And to be honest, I didn't really know what to expect because the event didn't actually happen last year. So it was like a reboot of the event. And so even the organisers were a bit kind of, are we going to get many people in or not? I'm happy to say it was overwhelming success. We had our little section, the Dreamcast Junkyard, in one corner of the event hall. quite happily and quite useful. It was right by the bar, so that was good. we had like six different displays, six Dreamcasts with a host of games. I think the overall highlight of the event for us anyway was having the two guns, you know, for House of the Dead 2 and Confident Virtua Cop 2. People just love those, and also the two twin fighting sticks with the there's so many people who wanted to play like Capcom versus SNK 2 and Street Fighter 3 Third Strike. It was just a phenomenal event. Got to speak to so many people who I speak to on Twitter but didn't actually know in real life. You know, you'll back me up on this, Rob. When we go to these events and we do them, you get so many people coming up to you going, "Oh, hi, mate, you know, I'm such and such." And you're like, "Right, who?" And then they kind of have to explain to you who they are on Twitter with the little face or, you know, the little avatar they have.
Yeah.
And also, another cool thing, again, I've said this before when we did Play Manchester last year, was the amount of kids who come to these events who have maybe been brought by their dads who are into retro gaming, who don't have a clue about what the Dreamcast is, and you show it to them, and they love it. They're like, "This is brilliant. I really want to get one." At least two little lads said to me, or I said to their dads while they were, "Can we get one of these?" And they were like, "Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, we'll, you know, go on and have a look and see if we can get one on eBay." So that was really cool. And
is great, that, isn't it? Like, I think it's great, specifically with the kids, as you say, when they have absolutely zero idea what a Dreamcast is, and then they get to play all these ace games, and that you can see from their faces. Like, I'm sure, obviously, we don't know, but I can guess that most of them have one of the modern consoles. But I think the point is that what they end up playing on these systems is from the old school, you know, and these games are markedly different than what is released now on the modern systems. So I think it really, like, pops, you know, like, visually as an experience that they remember, and they're sort of immediately impressed with it and want to know more. Also sort of humbling as well, isn't it, that, you know, well, not humbling, that's the wrong word, but it makes you think that, you know, we're all absolutely massively into these systems, and then along comes this kid who may be like 10, and he's like, "What's a Dreamcast?"
It's true, yeah. I mean, there was these two kids playing, and they were like, "Have you got Street Fighter?" I was like, "Yeah, we've got Street Fighter 3, Third Strike. Do you want to play it?" Like, yeah. Give them both an arcade controller, you know, the sort of the arcade stick. And then, honestly, mate, I was watching it, I was just like, "This match is incredible. This match is about to explode." You know, and it's like, "Have you played Street Fighter 4?" They're like, "Yeah, they've obviously both played Street Fighter 4 on PS4, Street Fighter 5 even, but they were using the same kind of moves that they knew from like current gen stuff on these arcade sticks, and the game was incredible. Everyone was watching it, going, "These kids are like 9, 10 year old," and we're like, "This is awesome." You know, so it was just fantastic, really, to see. Young kids getting involved with the Dreamcast and loving it. So, yeah, that was really, really cool. I think the highlights for me, though, were not Dreamcast related. They were the fact that I got to play on Tempest 3000 on the new one, you know, the DVD player console from several decades ago. Tempest 3000, big fan of Tempest 2000 on the Jaguar. So, Tempest 3000.
What a game.
Yeah, great. It was just such a psychedelic, like, mindfuck, Tempest 3000, even more so than TXK on the Vita and Tempest 2000. And the standout moment for me was getting to play on a Pippin Atmark for the first time ever. I know it sounds stupid because this system is seen as an absolute dog, but they're so uncommon and they're so rare. And like,
what system is that?
It's a Pippin Atmark. It was an early attempt by Apple to get into the gaming.
I remember
sphere.
Adam Korlick did a thing on that.
Yes, I actually sent Adam a tweet when I saw this thing, and he was like, "Oh my god! Like, what games are on it?" So I was like, "It's Marathon, you know, Marathon, the first person shooter." And so I loaded it up, and I was like, "Yes." It says, "Which one do you want to play?" But like Marathon, and then like the sequel or something on the main screen. So I rotated the ball to Marathon 1, pressed the start button, and then you got this kind of Apple Mac error screen that came up, like a Finder error, like, "Would you like to restart the app?" I'm like, "That looks very familiar," being someone who's interested in like Apple Macs and things. I was like, "Yeah, okay." And then on the second attempt, it actually loaded up, and I was quite surprised how smooth it was, even though it was in like a really small window, almost like the 3DO version of Doom. It ran so smooth and so like just really well. So yeah, I was really kind of I believe that the term is stoked, using the States, to play on the Pippin Atmark. That was a first for me. But yeah, overall, Revival Solstice, it was a great event, and I loved pretty much every minute of it. But enough about that. Let's move on to some Dreamcast-related news, and we'll be back after this break. Welcome back. You are listening to episode 37 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. We have a special guest. His name is Stephen Robinson from Dreamcast Hub. And we're now going to talk about some Dreamcast-related, or loosely Dreamcast-related news. So that's a relief probably for you guys listening, because you're sick of hearing me talk about Pippin Atmark. First thing we're going to talk about is Kenju. Guys, have you heard of Kenju before?
I have.
You have?
Well, only because of the article. But I had before this very second.
Excellent. Okay, for you guys listening who don't know what Kenju is, Kenju was and I have to admit as well, I didn't actually know this until about maybe an hour and a half ago before coming on to do this podcast. Kenju was an Atomis Wave fighting game from Dream Factory, who were also responsible for Urgats, I believe it's pronounced, and also Tobal Number 1. It was a 3D fighting game in the style of Rival Schools Project Justice, and it was for the Atomis Wave. It's a shame Ross or Scott are not on this podcast, because they are resident experts on the Atomis Wave. But this game has recently been rediscovered by a guy called Showtime. And yeah, it looks really cool. I don't know if you gents have seen the video that I posted on the Dreamcast Junkyard.
No.
yeah, no.
Sorry. to be fair, what did you say? You'd put it up about an hour before we're recording?
Yes, so it's my fault to be honest.
But, yeah,
to be honest, I only dropped this in at the last minute, but I think it's really cool because it's an Atomis Wave fighting game by, as I say, Dream Factory. It was cancelled for unknown reasons. It's just been rediscovered in the last week. This guy, Showtime, has put videos up on YouTube, and I just think it looks really cool.
It's gorgeous. Very,
as I say,
the graphics are amazing.
It's almost cel-shaded.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. As I said, I didn't want to dwell on this for too long, just because there's not that much information about the game or, you know, where the game actually was dug up from or how, but I just thought it was worth mentioning because I'm a sucker for unreleased games and things like this.
That,
you know,
video you posted, was that the one with just the character introductions, or was that the one with the actual fighting?
It's got both. The beginning is character introductions, and then it goes into like the main menu, and then after that there's a fight between a character who just looks like he's doing kicks, and that's all, against some kind of like Blanka type beast thing in like a stadium. And it's very reminiscent of the, you know, the sports arena stage in Rival Schools.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to that. And even everything down to the, like, the visual style is, it's almost like it could be Rival Schools. You know, it's very similar. However, let's not dwell on that for too long, just because we don't really have much to say about it, because it's only just come to light. If any more information does come, and, you know, somebody said, will this be ported to Dreamcast? I highly doubt that, because it's only just been found for the Atomis Wave.
All right, so I'm starting a petition and a Kickstarter and a GoFundMe and Indiegogo.
Stephen, right, now you mentioned that, should we go there? Should we
talk
about
it? Yeah, we might as well.
Let's go there.
Let's go there. Okay, do you want to just, like, explain what we're talking about to listeners?
Okay, so for one reason or another, there is this obsession with the community to build a PC. I'm sorry, I meant a Dreamcast too. And I can't quite understand, because the goals behind it are exactly what my current PC does. So what we want is a machine that is backwards compatible with Dreamcast games, also does 1080p, 60 frames per second, outputs through HDMI, and you can also play new games on it as well. Yeah, this console exists. It's called the PC, or... I'm just going to say PC. I was going to go Mac, but not really.
No, not at all.
But these projects keep popping up, and I can't get behind them because I don't understand the motivation. When people talk about hey, we're going to make this console and we're going to go to Sega and we're going to tell them why it's a good idea, you would have to explain to Sega why it's financially a good idea to be in a market where there's already six consoles that are out currently, and they're going to have to eat from that little pie. Yeah, the main problem is, even if you come out with a new Sega system, you've lost everything already that Sega was. They're not Sega from 15 years ago. Sega from 15 years ago took chances, and they made games based on passion, not based on, hey, this will be successful. I think the only passion that they still have left is like the Yakuza series for the most part.
I think a lot of these projects are fueled by nostalgia and little else, to be honest. And that's, I'm not slagging them off for that. I mean, obviously we do this because we love the Dreamcast, but we're about celebrating what exists and what was, not what could be, with a question mark after it.
I think you're being too nice, Tom, to be honest with you.
Well,
I think it's not nostalgia, it's greed. I think people are doing it to try and get a buck out of people.
And sometimes I feel it's also for people's ego. You know, like, hey, I'm the guy who made that project that made that thing happen.
Yeah.
Just to clarify what Stephen was on about initially, we've both been contacted by various people and seen on the internet in the wake of the implosion of Project Dream, a slew, shall we call it, a myriad of different projects that have come to the fore where they're saying, we want to make a system that's capable of playing Dreamcast games and can do all these other fantastical things, which Stephen just elaborated on. And you know, until I see some kind of concrete proof that any of these things actually exist other than a few drawings, then, you know, I'm not interested, you know.
That's the thing that, I mean, look, I'd like to preface again everything I say now by saying, like, I get it. I really get it. Like, I get it, guys. It's, you want to be, the passion's there, and I don't want, you know, I'm not down for no reason at all, but I'm just so tired now. Tired is the word. I'm tired of seeing some line drawings, like some naff looking prototype, or, you know, like sketches on pieces of white paper with a couple of lines, some naff, and no disrespect, some naff logo. Look, it's another roughly rectangular or square box that I've drawn out, and it looks like it's taken you like 15 minutes to do that. Oh, maybe here's a render. Look, a black or white box with some really fake looking shine on it. I don't know, just know. It's getting to the stage where I think it's all, I'm not calling anyone like a crook, but like when you're asking for money for this stuff and it's built on nothing, like, I'm sorry,
I'll call him a crook.
You call them a crook. I mean, like, it's just getting to the stage now where it seems to be getting worse and worse. Like, we've talked about these projects before in the past, and Project Dream seemed to have more going about it than what we've seen come out recently. And we stuck it to Project Dream. But these are, like, in my opinion, these are even lower. There's nothing, absolutely nothing. The website, it, like, they don't exist, or they're in, you know, absolute bare bones. There's absolutely no official communication with Sega, and yeah, it's nothing but a bunch
understand.
Of drawings.
They know somebody who could have worked at Sega 20 years ago, and he, you know, he might have connections. my honest main problem with all of this is what it creates, and my problem is that the second people start making posts about these things, whether it be in Dreamcast Junkyard or Dreamcast Hub Facebook group, it completely divides the community, and it's unnecessary.
Yeah, so, totally.
Yeah, it's just, you get these huge arguments where people are like, no, it could happen this time, and then the other guys are like, no, it's total bullshit, because it is.
Yeah.
No bias then.
No, none at all. No.
I think that's a really good point. I do. I honestly think that's a really good point. The way that these things have split, and I've seen it. Like, we've all seen it online. We've seen how vitriolic people can get, and we don't need that. No. You know, I'm a supporter of Arsenal Football Club. I have enough about this. Arsene Wenger. People who say Arsene Wenger should leave. People saying Arsene Wenger should stay. There's some people saying Arsene Wenger should stay and spend a dump truckload of money. And it's,
Rob, can I stop you? I didn't realise you were a fan of Arsenal. Get the fuck off this podcast right now.
hey, look. Look, Tom, come on. You've just won the Charity Shield. Pogba's on his way.
Oh, did we win?
Yeah,
it
was 2-1.
Cool.
Yeah. I think the thing is from all this, though, is there's one positive. To spin it slightly, there's one positive, and that is the fact that the Dreamcast revival projects and other things show that people do really want to relive Sega. I don't know if you've all noticed in the last few weeks that on one of the trending topics was the Sega Mega Drive or Genesis plug-in device.
Okay.
Which was released, I think, like 3 years ago. But all of the sites and loads of Sega fan sites as well were saying how it was like this new console was released. It wasn't. But just because it made news, I think someone in the Metro probably, because their journalism's terrible, didn't check their facts, and obviously thought Nintendo had bought their announced their NES one, and so I think they thought Sega were going to jump on the bandwagon. But the amount of people who were interested because the Mega Drive was being released, I think it says the same for Dreamcast as well. I think everyone wants to relive and get Sega back to where it was. So although it's negative in the fact that these people are absolute dickheads and haven't got a clue what they're doing and are promising the moon, in actual fact, they actually it's a symptom of a bigger thing with Sega that I think, like Atari almost. You know, I mean, when I was a teenager, Atari were pretty. I know the Jaguar was out, and I don't want to offend the Jaguar because Tom's on the podcast.
Careful, mate.
But the Atari was, you know, late 90s. Atari was pretty much dead. You know what I mean? It's licensing their stuff out to Hasbro and pretty much gone. The amount of Atari stuff in the last 10 years, it's become cool again. And I think with Sega, the same thing's happening. So I think it's inevitable with Dreamcast is going to happen. Whether that will ever come to a point where someone will do anything with the Dreamcast, it's not quite, I think people are quite stupid, and they think people think that because the Mega Drive got really released and you can put, you know, you can put chips onto a little plug-in TV device, I think people think they can do the same with Dreamcast, which is not really intelligent. I think there's a real lack of common knowledge, a common sense, sorry. There's a real lack of common sense with people. I think they genuinely think people just draw something on a page and then it suddenly comes to life in a game.
Yeah. Well, it's an instant gratification thing, you know?
I just want to make one final point on this subject before we move on. It's the same. I would like to mirror what Stephen said about the divisiveness of this kind of thing, certainly on social media. As soon as you put anything about a Dreamcast 2 or any kind of other project that's happening, you get people crawling out from the woodwork, and you've got this one side who are like totally supporting it, and you've got this other side who are like dead against it, and it's just like you get this, it's like a war that can never be won, and it just ruins it for everybody else. Yeah. It's like, stop.
But isn't
stop.
That to an extent, but I know what you're saying, but isn't that, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but isn't that to an extent what, don't we want a little bit of that in any sort of retro scene? Because if we don't have that, there's no passion, and if there's no passion, no one cares.
I don't know, Mike. I mean, there's passion for... There's arguing about things that exist, and there's arguing about hypotheticals.
Well, religion's done that for years, so that's not going to be a problem.
I think Tom's right. I think it's misdirected passion.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it could have gone towards... All this effort for making this thing that doesn't need to exist could go for things that do need to exist, like translating totally Dreamcast games from Japan that would be amazing to play in English. Like... Yep. Yeah. They're just
Sega Gaga.
There you go.
Sega
Gaga. like there was a guy who was actually working on a translation for that last I checked, and just imagine if there was an entire community behind him, like Project Dream. Imagine if there was like 2,000 people behind that one guy saying, "We're going to help you make this get done." We would have it by now. We'd all be playing it. Like.
Yeah. If you're going to set up a Patreon for something, then that's the sort of thing I want it set up for. I don't want it set up for another Dreamcast 2 console based on a couple of drawings.
I think we need to draw this one to a close. Sorry, Stephen, what was your last point there?
The biggest thing is don't need to involve Sega in any of this stuff. It can just be completely community-driven, and I don't know why everybody obsesses with trying to involve Sega in it. They don't care anymore. That's not like their thing.
Yeah, it's not their goal, is it, anymore? It's not their... part of their business plan. Anyway, guys, I think we've talked about that long enough. That little thing that we were going to talk about for 5 minutes has like spiraled out of control, as is usually the case. Let's get back on track and speak about something that is actually real.
Yes.
Let's talk about Xenosider. Xenosider is back. Retro Summers have actually said that they were working on it behind the scenes after the Kickstarter failed. It should be... Well, I'm not going to give a time because we don't know when it's going to come, but they're still working on it. They're also working on Amoeba, the
visual novel.
The visual novel, yeah. I was very happy to hear that Carlos and the rest of the team are still working on Xenosider. What do you guys think?
Yeah, brilliant. Excellent news. I think that's that they're a great example, Red Summers, of people who actually do care. Because I think even though there was some criticism about their Was it Kickstarter? It was Kickstarter, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
I think a lot of people, some people criticised it was a bit too high, their initial goal. But they haven't taken that, you know, to heart. They've had no sort of, I've seen nothing at all on any sort of comebacks for that. They literally got back into it. They're doing it. Fantastic.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, I mean, I speak to Carlos, like, I mean, I kind of consider him as a friend as well, because yeah. I speak to him quite a lot on Facebook, and he's just got such enthusiasm, and he puts his money where his mouth is, because he actually shows things that they've made, rather than just, like, having this rhetoric, you know, rather than...
When they put out that demo, that was the greatest idea and the most transparent thing any Kickstarter has ever done, I feel. Where they're like, literally try this in your Dreamcast today. Like, see what you think of it. Tell us what you like and what you don't. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said this when we were discussing originally, I think, the Kickstarter. And I said, you know, I thought it was too much money and they probably wouldn't make it. But and they didn't make it. But I also said that if you were going to give your money to anybody, then these are the guys you should give it to, because they just went about it in the absolute right way. The demo, the artwork, the videos, the communication, the passion, the, you know, like the involvement with it within the community was all on the money. So I'm really happy to see that it's still going. And I don't know what other funding models they're looking at, but I hope they can get something to make this happen.
After the Kickstarter failed, as you can imagine, I think the guys were quite sort of down about it. And I just said, look, you only have to look at things like Leona's Tricky Adventures that were failed Kickstarters but actually came out because of, like, the fans of the Dreamcast wanted that game.
Yep.
So it's not the end of the road, you know, and lo and behold, it's you know, coming forward. I don't know how they're going about funding it. I don't even know if they have got any funding. I think they might just be doing it in the spare time at the moment. But, I mean, the future's bright. See what happens with Xenocider in the near future. Should be good. Okay, thank you. Start again.
So you don't want to keep it?
Okay, thank you. Okay, we're back after that lovely musical interlude. You're listening to episode 37 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod with Dreamcast Hub. Now we're going to talk about Mac and X. In 2000, IGN said, in Mac and X, the strange and the occult come together in some of the most intriguing creature designs since Blue Stinger. It's in the area of the visual arts that the game excels. The game is a graphical marvel, and they awarded it 7.9 out of 10. Likewise, GameSpot also awarded it 7.9 out of 10, and they said, Mac and X is a great addition to an already strong library. It's not every day that a game as unique as this one comes along. This game is definitely worth checking out. Gentlemen, have you played Mac and X? And if so, do you agree with these statements?
Yes, and yes.
Okay, I'll come to you first, Stephen. What do you think?
I'm actually a very big fan of Mach and X. It was the first game that I got when I got my Dreamcast again, getting back into it. Yeah, it came in a red call case, like one of the fake ones. I played it for just days and days. It is an extremely difficult game, I'll give it that. But very, very satisfying when you start to get it right. You get kind of in a groove and kind of a I think of like Devil May Cry 2 in the way you kind of get in a groove of playing it. Not in style, yeah. Of course, at all, but essentially that I still feel it took years and years to make a game as original as it. I think like Red Steel was the first game that used first-person swordplay again.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
And
yeah.
I love the fact that there are so many playable characters. It's a bit like Mega Man, because you beat a boss and you play as him. So.
Yeah.
For those people who don't know Mac X and don't know what we're talking about, A, get yourself on Google and just have a quick look. B, it's quite unique on the Dreamcast in that it's a story-driven first-person, not a shooter. It's more of a first-person hack and slash, which, for me initially, kind of turned me off to it because I was more into... At the time that the game came out, there weren't that many... Well, there were no other like story-driven first-person games. I think after this came Soldier of Fortune.
Yep.
Because all the other first-person games were kind of like battle arena games. Yeah. So it kind of drew me to it because I wanted to play a story-driven game. That said, once you get into it and you realise how cool it is, I mean, you can jump over enemies and it reminded me a little bit of like Ocarina of Time. You know, you can do some like backflips over enemies.
So satisfying.
And like attack them from behind. Yeah. Sorry, Rob, what's your experience with the game?
No, I think I've written about it.
You did. You wrote an article called A Mac and Xmas.
Oh, yes, that's right. What a fabulous header that was. I'm not at all embarrassed by that. Yeah, I did. I played Mac and X. I've got Mac and X. I've got the Japanese version. I haven't got anywhere near the end. I'm gonna say right off the bat. I've got about, I don't know, 6 or 7 levels in, I think, when I last played it seriously. Mm. The thing I like best about Mac and X, one is that first person slasher. I love that it is something that, apart from, as Stephen's mentioned, there's games that have come later that have done similar thing. There was some first person medieval hack and slash as well, which followed, and I can't remember its name. For the
what system was that on?
I can't remember
was
now.
Was it Daggerfall? Was it something like that?
It could have been Daggerfall. I'm not sure, but we've all seen the sort of first person slashes that followed, but it's just got such a unique art style. And I agree, like, in terms of, like, when you're playing it, I agree with Stephen where he says that it's actually quite aggressive up front in terms of you getting used to how to play. I think he's right when you say you've got to be in a sort of zone. You've got to get into the magnetic zone in terms of how the combat works, because it's not like anything else really you've probably played before. The timings are all off in terms of when you would think you would need to attack, or you've got to get used to, as you say, like the flip move, which I think is quite overpowered, where you can flip completely over an enemy and then get in some crits from the rear. And you've got to get used to like how enemies can lunge forwards, and you've got to be able to dodge to the side or backwards.
Also being able to hit like missiles back at characters, you know,
it's that impressive.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah, I mean, you say Zelda, and I think there's something, I think you've got a little bit of something there, Tom, because you lock onto enemies, very similar to a Zelda game, and the sort of the cameras, I mean, obviously with Zelda, it's sort of slightly to one side, isn't it? But how Link moves when you're in that mode, where you sort of can dodge side to side or backwards, or backflip and roll forwards and things, and then you can thrust forward or you can slash in different directions depending on the input you're inputting, is very similar.
Yeah.
But obviously, because of the first-person perspective, it is more intense. I got to say, like when I first played the game, when I bought the game, I was again sold primarily because it was Atlus, and I'm a sucker for Atlus and their art style. And the art style in this game just looked amazingly weird.
Even that intro with that weird like carrot, the Macken like AI in that tube.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's looks
a weird
like,
character.
I don't know what.
With the face and everything, it's like what am I looking at?
It's like a cross between like a Tim Burton style creation and I don't know, some weird Japanese manga. Like, yeah, it was so alien, so weird. So yeah, that was the thing that first got me. But then I can remember playing it and just being absolutely—I didn't get the combat at all and being really turned off it. But luckily, just because of how there's some really bad bits that are so bad they're good, and also the fact that
like the voice acting,
as I say,
the voice acting's terrible.
Like the voice, yeah, we can talk about the voice acting more, but oh my god, like the English translation and the voice acting is appalling. But it's so bad that it's almost something that you want to play more of it because it's so bad? Like, how bad can get? How bad can this get?
There's an interesting passage on the Wikipedia page. Obviously, we know about like the fact that you can take over other characters' bodies and things and do this brain jacking. But there's an interesting.
Oh yeah, did we not mention?
No,
that?
I don't...
you can the demonic sword thing. You can brain jack people. And then you play as them.
I just love that you get a BJ rank.
the passage on Wikipedia says the player can control a number of characters by brainjacking, which leaves the person a vegetable. I thought that's not very PC, is it? Let's be honest.
there's very little about this game that I think is PC. Oh, well, there's certainly a lot of. We're going to move on to that
like later on in the game.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, like this thing has got a massive hard on for like Nazi style thing. Do you know? Have you seen Hellboy the film?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know like the weird like occult Nazis they've got in that? It's like that, and it's like I'm not. You know, the game doesn't necessarily, you know, say that these are like absolutely awfully evil either. It seems to have sort of some like you know hard on for them at
times.
Well,
they had some good ideas.
Yeah. We're not promoting Nazism, by the way.
No,
just in case you wonder.
No,
not at all.
Fictional Mac and X Nazism.
Yeah, Mike, what's your experience with Mac and X?
Well, I haven't had a huge amount of experience with it. I played it today, first time, probably in about a year, I think. The art style's amazing. I love the art style and sort of the character designs really good. But as with every first person shooter on a Dreamcast, the controls killed it for me. I can't do it until Twin Sticks came out. I could not do any first person shooter on the console. But saying that, I love the sort of the idea, the sort of, you know, close combat from someone who I sort of my first experience of first person shooters properly was Jedi Knight on the on PC. So obviously the whole sword play, as it were, seems right to me. But I did find the slightly odd, the sort of neo-fascist sort of artwork a little bit odd. I think Japanese version's a lot worse than the PAL version, though.
Yeah, the
if I remember right.
Yeah, the PAL version's got a dump truck load of censorship.
No, I have to buy the other copy.
That's quite understandable with, you know, obviously being released in Germany. You couldn't have... Well, there is still a lot of Nazi symbolism in the PAL version, but I can imagine more so in the Japanese version. I don't know. Interesting. I might look into that.
I need to get the Japanese version.
I think I say this in that a Mac and Xmas article that I read a couple of years back. Like I talk about the
well, the main picture is the one of the characters with like a big swastika as a face
with a massive swastika. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. He's got a swastika as a face. Like it could not be more upfront. And like a lot of the other characters, even if they've not got like swastikas on, they've got sort of like 30s style militarized European uniforms on, and they've got shades, and they're portrayed as like very cool individuals, you know, like powerful, cool people. And
the problem is, though, with the swastika as a face, is that it's the symbol itself doesn't have the same resonance with the Japanese, does it?
No,
because I think if I remember rightly, swastikas are actually on Japanese maps as, I want to say, youth hostels. I'm wrong. It's not youth hostels. It's
the swastika, though. That's the other one, right?
No, that is swastika. It's a.
Yeah, but that goes the other direction.
But I think the Buddhism uses it.
Yeah, that one goes a different direction, and it means love.
Okay, let's not dwell on this for too long.
I was just going to say something that
this is becoming Nazi dream card.
Something. Let's move away from all the Nazi stuff.
Yeah, please.
We always talk about the Nazi stuff. No, I do like the one of the cool things as well that drew me to this game is that it takes that Japanese thing of that a person and their sword are one, and like the weapon almost has a soul, or it's like the extension of its user, and it the one and the, you know, they're one and the same thing. Like it's a bit like in the same sort of thing as in Soul Calibur. It's the same idea, and I think it's pretty cool. And to be fair, that should let's bring it more back to the game mechanics. That's not just me talking like up in the air, like philosophizing. Like the different characters you can quote unquote brain jack all have different weapons and different styles and different attributes, and like some are faster, some are slower, and some can have different sort of special abilities. So it really is like the person changes, and more often than not, the weapon changes as well, or the secondary weapon changes.
Yeah, there was a game that was quite heavily involved with that kind of thing called Messiah on the PC. We were like a little angel who could like take over different people's bodies, which I believe was actually rumored to be coming to the Dreamcast at one point.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, so that's quite an interesting parallel to draw. But let's kind of draw this one to a close. Guys, do we recommend that people pick up Mac and X if it's cheap and available?
Yes.
Yes. Asterix. Yeah, I think you want to try and get... I think if you're going to try and play... I mean, maybe people disagree with me. From my point of view, if you're going to try and play Mac and X, then you've got to go full X. And you've got to go and track to get the Japanese version and get the full-on Nazi brain-jacking madness.
Mm. And I'm not entirely sure we're going
to make sure you pick up the Nazi version. Just saying, guys.
I'd like to distance the Dreamcast Junkyard from Rob's... Nazi overtones here.
It is the Japanese version is cheaper, I think, as well.
It is cheaper.
Version,
that was my next point.
Okay, there we go.
It's cheaper, and like I don't know. Like okay, yeah. Asterix. Like if you've got, I understand that people can be very like sensitive in terms of the Nazis, and if you're not in, if you have any issue with that, then obviously don't. You shouldn't pick this game up anyway, because I think even the non-Japanese versions have some of this stuff in. But I was you, if you're going to play this, then you should do. You should do primarily because it's just so weird.
Yeah,
like
it's an experience you need to have. There. I think like, being a Dreamcast fan, I think it's just one of like the 30 games that you absolutely must play to see what the Dreamcast is about.
It's very unique. It's very indicative of the Dreamcast era.
That's the only reason. The only reason I'd recommend it is for that reason. I think as an actual game from someone who doesn't necessarily like that style of game on Dreamcast, I wouldn't be quite so. I don't think it stands out as an actual game.
That's fair enough. No, we've all got our views and opinions.
Great style, though.
Anyway, so yeah, if you get the chance, please pick Mac and X up, see what it's all about. You know, let us know what you think about it. We'd like to know your opinions. But yeah, guys, I think that's going to do it for this particular episode of the Dream Pod. A couple of things I just want to mention before we draw this one to a close. Thanks to KTX, we successfully gave away the 5 copies of Leona's Tricky Adventures. So congratulations to our winners, and also thank you very much to KTX for supplying those copies of the game. That was very cool of them. Also, as ever, massive thanks to our Patreon supporters for continuing to, as I say, support the podcast and allow us to do this without having any advertising or anything like that on the podcast. So, in no particular order, I would like to thank for their contribution. And I do apologise again if I pronounce anybody's name wrong. I apologise. Just send me a message and I'll get it right in the next one. I've got Joe Simkovitz, Ben Warwick, Adam Lundgren, Daniel Turner, Ben Lancaster, Dave Baldwin, Matthew Smith, Tristan Brown, James Steele, Sean Robinson, Dan Payton, DCGX, Spencer Johnson, Garrett Otto, Chris Unwin, Alexander Padilla, Jason Cathers, Brandon Aaron, Alex Hirsch, and John Thompson. Thank you very much for supporting the Dreamcast Junkyard on Patreon. We appreciate it massively. Also, I want to say thank you to Mr. Stephen Robinson for joining us this time on episode 37. Thank you very much.
I appreciate you having me.
No problem. Would you like to pimp your own sites and destinations online?
I would love to.
Excellent. Please feel free.
So there is our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/DC Hub. And then at my ad address on Twitter is @DreamcastHubcom. And the only other thing I would say, I do have a new project that we are working on, and that would be a documentary for the Dreamcast. We are going to be putting up the Indiegogo soon, and I do have a few fellows already involved with it. Some you may already know.
Yes, a couple, yeah.
So we're basically going to be making it by the content creators. That's the idea. So it's going to be kind of like an I Love the 80s style, but with Dreamcast and with more information. But yeah, that's about it. It's the only things I could think of. I'm sure I missed some. You can add it in post.
Also, the actual website as well, dreamcasthub.com.
See, I knew I'd forget something. Yeah, check that out too, guys.
Cool. You can find Rob at t3.com, but you can also find him on Twitter at
R. Nicholas J. That's R. Nicholas J. All one word.
Excellent. And you can also find Mike on Twitter at
Space_Turnip.
Brilliant. They're also both lurking around the Facebook page and group as well. So if you want to find them,
lurking
menacingly, yes. You can find me on Twitter at Tom Lee C, or you can find us all collectively on Twitter at the DC Junkyard and on Facebook at groups. Whatever it is, the Dreamcast Junkyard. Just put Dreamcast. It'll come up in that little drop down thing alongside Dreamcast Hub and all the rest of them. Or you can find the main blog at www.dreamcastjunkyard.co.uk. That will do it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to my co-hosts. Thank you to all our Patreons. Thank you to you. And that'll do it. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Please stop this disc now.